Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and with me, as usual, is Ryan Gutowski, a man who can turn invisible, but only if you're not looking at him. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing good. Everybody thinks I'm a liar, but I'm not. So
yeah. Well, it's hard that you have to live with this struggle that
it's a real
burden. will never believe you.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like it happens.
It's like look away. Up, oh, I'm invisible, and then they turn around. I'm like, ah, you just missed it. You just missed it.
So. Yeah, that's the noise you have to make.
Yeah.
After you do it. Ah.
Yeah. So how you been, man? It's Teacher Appreciation Week, and I hope you're feeling appreciated.
Oh, always. You know, you did, you know, just completely insult me in our previous recording right before this about my teaching skills, but that's okay.
Hey, it's okay.
Hurt my heart just a little bit.
Well, is there Game Teacher Appreciation Week?
There should be. You know what? Like, maybe you go in somewhere. You should try that. During Teacher Appreciation Week, I want you to go up to people and say, look, I teach board games. Can I get a free sandwich?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Like, and they'll say, sir, this is a clothing shop. Why are you asking for a sandwich?
excuse me. Can I get a free cup of chili? Sir, this is a greeting card place.
Yes, you are in Hallmark, sir.
You're in Hallmark. We don't sell chili here, sir. Well, that's your loss.
Yes,
never
indeed.
Coming.
Well, sounds like a lot of income you're not bringing in because you're not selling chili.
Yeah, I mean, you put the pot of chili right next to the greeting cards. Somebody's coming in here getting grandma a card and a pot of chili. Man,
yeah,
missing out on all that income.
Yep,
Rick, what you been playing? You like that?
Well, Ryan,
you like that?
That was one of the smoother transitions we've ever had. So, Ryan, I have been playing Faza. Now, Faza is not a game where I'm just saying the word father in a really strange, like, accent.
Yeah.
Faza is a game that is kind of puts you – it's a cooperative game. Ryan, what do you think about cooperative games?
I like cooperative games. I think they're really good to especially bring in new gamers with. I'm a fan of cooperative.
Awesome. Glad to hear it because that's what this one is. Okay. Faza, it reminds me a lot of Pandemic. How do you feel about Pandemic?
I like Pandemic. My favorite is Pandemic Iberia.
Well, there you go. So Faza is a game that we got a review copy of, and we're going to be really pushing it a lot harder once it goes to Kickstarter, which is going to be later in this year. But Faza is a cooperative game in which you are survivors after an alien attack on Earth. And kind of to go along with that is a wonderful artwork that kind of reminds you of like comic books from like alien comic books from that. It really makes me think of Mars Attacks, which is one of my favorite movies. You are four people that are survivors, and the aliens are trying to destroy the last remnants of Earth. So they can send out drones that can, you know, attack you. They've got and then they've got three big ships that you're trying to destroy that have the ability to send out more drones or have the ability to attack you, or they have the ability to phasaform. So instead of terraforming your planet, they're phasaforming it.
Nice.
And that's to make it more inhabitable for them. And so on your turn, on the human's turn, you all can take your actions whenever you want, but you're trying to attack the drones and attack the big ships using your characters. And you each have like special powers and have different actions that you can take based on what you are. So like, you know, the scout can go out and they can use a ray gun or a bazooka to attack and have stronger attacks, and attacks are taken care of with dice. Then you also might have other roles that allow you to heal people. My favorite role that's out there is the farmer, just because I like the idea of a farmer fighting against aliens. But then you'll take a bunch of turns and then the aliens will go. They are really powerful working together. And what's tricky is that they take a number of turns equal to how many people you have playing the game. So there's three big ships. So one of them might even go twice and they just really do a lot of devastation to the board. But anyway, you keep fighting, trying to destroy those ships. Every time you attack them, they do something bad to you. Usually. So there's just a really long, you know, fight going back and forth. You got to strategize with your team, and if you defeat them, you win. If they defeat you, you lose. And that is Faza. And it's fun. I really like it.
That's really cool. That sounds really nice.
Okay. Yeah. And I think as far as the people that would like this game, if you play Pandemic and you're looking for just a slightly different theme around those kind of mm-hmm. mechanics, this would work. I think also the artwork and really honestly the theme of the game, I think, make it more approachable than Pandemic. I'm not saying Pandemic is that hard to, you know, kind of get people excited about, but I do think kind of this is just a more interesting theme than fighting viruses. Personally, yeah. I really like the theme.
That's cool. And I think also, I think some people are pandemicked out, and so they might want something like this, something just a change of pace, change of scenery, change of mechanics. You know, I think this might be a big hit. So,
yeah. Certainly. What about you, Ryan? What have you been playing?
So let's keep it in space theme. You know, my love for Space Base. It was one of my favorite games of 2018 and a real surprise because we played a ton of Space Base after finding out how good it was in October of 2018. And so after playing so much Space Base, we had to get its first expansion. It was called The Emergence of Shy Pluto. And it just recently came out. It recently hit stores. And we bought a copy from our local game shop, Moxie. And so it's interesting because I think they explain it as it's part of a saga. And so it's kind of a campaign that's built into Space Base. Some people I've seen online where they just took all the cards and just like put them into their Space Base deck and they were good to go and they just didn't care about the campaign. I actually, Aaron and I have been playing through it, and it's interesting because some of my last win that I won against Aaron and Josiah the other day, because I had went with the strategy of picking up these new ships that are introduced in one of the phases that allow you to get extra rolls on your turn if you save up, basically save up these supplies, you can get extra rolls that are only valid for yourself. So Emergence of Shy Pluto is really pretty cool, even though we're in the beginning of it. I feel like it adds some interesting mechanics. I don't know how much it works as far as like a campaign, you know, mm-hmm. It seems very shallow. It's like, here are some new cards for this. And if this happens, flip the page. And so it's fine. People who are looking for more of a campaign experience, like a legacy game or something, you probably will not find it here. But if you love Space Base and you just want more Space Base with extra little things, it's definitely worth it. So far.
So if you like Space Base with things.
Yeah, Space Base, and you want some more mechanics, it's cool. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I would still play Space Base, the original game, with new gamers, but I don't think I would play this with new gamers. I would just keep this, just our family, playing it. So
sweet. Well, I actually haven't even played Space Base yet, so
I didn't play with us at Atlanta?
I didn't, sir.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay.
Nah, I gotta try it out.
Man, it's so good.
And then sounds like Shy Pluto. I am a fan of Pluto, so
yeah.
Sounds like something we need to check out. Well, Ryan, we're gonna cut our "What have we been playing?" a little short because we have a ton of stuff to do this episode, and in our next segment is an interview I did with Catherine Himes of Thorny Games, which specializes in games that explore language. And the interview was really awesome. I got to talk to her about some really cool stuff. So I hope that all of you enjoy it on the other side of this break. Okay, everybody, welcome back to our podcast, and today I've got a wonderful special guest with us, Catherine Himes from Thorny Games. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Well, thank you for coming on our show. So before we kind of get into the depths of this awesome interview, can you tell us a little bit about Thorny Games and what they do?
Yeah, gladly. So Thorny Games is an indie game studio out of San Francisco. We make tabletop mostly role-playing games as well as live-action games. And up to now, all of our games focus on either language or cryptography.
Definitely some games that I think stand out a little bit. So before we kind of get into some of those games, what led you to working in this particular, you know, market or theme of and niche of games?
Yeah, great question. One, I think I... personal passion is the easy answer there. Both me and my design partner have like deep, rich, separate lives in both language and cryptography. And that means that like when you have that energy and enthusiasm for a subject that you can see all of its sparkles and its thorns at once. And then you are an eager vehicle and want to share that with other people. But I would also say that I think that both of these are very carefully chosen, I guess, focuses because they each offer a different kind of lens where you can talk about bigger things in a more specific way. So, for example, with language, we're often using the focus around linguistics and how people speak to really say more about who people are and what identity is and what culture is, because our language actually is pretty fundamental to so much of what we experience as culture and how we interface with each other. And then cryptography is an interesting way of being able to talk about information and trust. So we're able to talk about some meaty subjects that a lot of people do want to play games about, but just from these kind of corner edges that end up lending a different kind of lens to them.
Yeah. So you guys have three games that are kind of out right now. Well, two that you can get your hands on and one that you've, you know, is kind of just growing, I believe, Xenolanguage.
Yeah, it's in active playtesting right now. So we've taken it on the con circuit and we're gearing up for a 2019 release.
Awesome. So, like, can you give us, like, the quick, like, 1-2-sentence summary of, like, dialect and sign in Xenolanguage? Like, what is it that players are doing in these games?
Yeah, I can go through each one of them.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So Dialect is a game about language and how it dies. That is the tagline. It is a tabletop story game or role-playing game where you tell the story of an isolated community and what happens to them over time. But what's interesting about how you tell their story is that you collaboratively define pieces of their dialect over the course of play as a way of grounding what happens to them, what they care about, who they fundamentally are, and why they're different from the rest of the world outside. And that means that over the course of a single game session, the set of players are telling the story of this isolated group of people, but also becoming fluent in their own special dialect, like their own kind of secret language amongst themselves that ends up being a map of the people that they're playing as. So that is Dialect. Sign is a live-action game. That means that it's played by actually embodying characters. And it is based on the true story of a real language called Nicaraguan Sign Language. That is a language that it was born in modern times, so the late 1970s and early 80s, but from the hands of children in Nicaragua. And so like the two-sentence summary there is that there was no sign language in Nicaragua, and so that meant that if you were deaf, you didn't have a native language. But a group of children were brought together, and for the first time, they were around people that were like them, and they were making friends and wanted to just experience the world on their own terms. And in doing so, they started collaboratively defining a set of signs through play. So just through interactions on the playground or in the classroom or behind the backs of teachers grew into the basis for a real language that was like taught to subsequent grades as they came in. And then blossomed into what is the official sign language of Nicaragua today. And that's just an amazing story, but the game itself is really meant to honor that story. And through a very, very small piece of offering people, I guess, a morsel of what that experience may have been like, because so much of those basic instincts are in all of us.
That's awesome. And to think about, like, you know, there are games out there that are supposed to recreate things that happened in real life. You can think about a ton of like war games and things like this, but those are not you know, there was never Dwight Eisenhower sitting at a table that's like, okay, I'm going to move my pieces here, you know, and you, it's not really recreating this, but, you know, I've looked through the rules of Signs, haven't had the chance to play it, but it truly is like you sharing that experience, you know, in the most minimalist way that you can, but you're sharing that experience with those children, and it's something that you can actually feel like, whoa, like I just experienced something that I wouldn't have experienced otherwise. It's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think it's really meant to offer that kind of hands-on experience. I mean, the real experience of this language and of any kind of history that people tackle will obviously be so very far from what a game can capture. But even just offering people a morsel of that and putting them actually in the body, in the mindset of someone who was real and like had a very different lived experience than you is, I think, really, really cool and really powerful.
And so, like, you know, we're talking about these games and how different they are from, you know, these are not regular pitches that you're giving, you know, we're not saying, well, you're this dwarf and you, you know, lost your axe and you have to go find it. That's not your pitch is a little bit different. So, you know, what do you think, that it is about your games that, there's an audience out there for them? What do you think people are looking for?
Yeah. I think that people are hungry for experience and storytelling, and our games are really rooted in allowing people to tell awesome stories together and to experience those stories, embody them. Two, I think like they're telling different kinds of stories than what are, you know, the typical fare that people get in a lot of mainstream, which at this point, like, it can be fun, but there's so many places that you can get it. So there are so many people and so much more that we can express in games as a medium. And I think that people are really hungry for that. And then I think that there is also just a lot of people that are genuinely enthusiastic about language. Like, we've tapped into something where I think a lot of people have these deep passions and interests. And so we find that a lot of people who are enthusiastic about our games are, one, there's a segment of people who consider themselves like hardcore gamers that are drawn into, you know, wanting to look at new systems and see, you know, how, you know, something like whatever's novel and shiny. People who also have a passion for linguistics on the side, but then also a whole new set of people that are just really interested in the subject of language and like getting deep into the minds of people and being able to create your own dialect and language in and of itself that aren't actually big gamers. And so we find that it kind of draws people in from both sides. So both from like the subject matter and from the people that are really into games themselves and wanting to tinker with systems.
Yeah, a big thing that drew me to your games was my wife is a romance language major, and so and works with refugees, and so has a lot of language experiences. The other day we were sitting watching a YouTube video that was like, guess the language as you hear the person talking, and she was like killing it. She was like, that's Mongolian. I was like, how did you know that was Mongolian? Like, she, knocking it out of the park. And I think these are the kinds of games that she would love, and I think a lot of her friends would love, that don't necessarily want to sit down and roll a bunch of dice and battle monsters and things like that.
Or, right.
I mean, even some of the lighter fare that this would be, yeah, they would see meaning in what they're experiencing. So, you know, I've checked on the rules in Sign and been really wanting to try that one out, but I did notice in that game that you mentioned that players sometimes might feel uncomfortable. And I feel like that's not an emotion that a lot of games are trying to evoke in their gameplay experiences. Do you think, though, that that's something we need to try to do a little bit better as an industry?
Yeah, I think that games should tackle important, varied, meaningful topics. And as a part of that, when you have something that's helping you to explore real things that are important into the world, some of them will be uncomfortable. I think you need the right tools to let people opt into their particular level of comfort or discomfort, and so that they feel like they're always in control and able to decide what they want to be a part of and not. But games aren't fluff. Like, we already know that games affect the world in really big and small ways. And I play games because they help me experience things beyond my own life, and then also that they connect me to other people. And I feel like that in doing that, you're going to tackle things that are just outside of you know, standard adventuring or rolling dice and deciding a winner. You know, you're going to, you know, talk about thornier things. And I think that's a really good thing. And again, going back to what we were discussing earlier, I think there's just a huge market for people who want to have meaningful play. Play that really is, you know, helping them change as people or connect with other people or like facilitating experiences and conversations that they wouldn't be able to have otherwise. And I think that, you know, some of that is uncomfortable, but a well-designed game will allow people to work through it. And with Sign in particular, part of that story is honoring or, you know, showcasing some of that discomfort. But what is helpful about that game too is just that there's an arc of experience where by the end of it, oftentimes people like are, you know, they've formed these friend cliques that are united by this emergent, you know, kind of proto sign language that they've created just in the moment. And they leave like having like maybe started in discomfort, but really like feeling like that they've triumphed over something. And that is an amazing arc that a game can help facilitate in like a couple hours of investment, which is really cool.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and it's one of those where it's like, God, it was so hard to come up with, you know, language and to do stuff. It's like, yeah, imagine that you had to do it. Imagine this was a thing that you were forced to do. That's what these kids had to do.
But it also is surprisingly natural for people too. So it's like, there's discomfort, but like people, I don't know, we're pretty excellent at a lot of things. And so when games can show you ways that you're powerful or excellent that you weren't even aware of, it's great.
Did you have any playtesting dialects or words or expressions that have stood out to you in your time with your two games?
Oh, so many, as you can imagine. We've done so many. It's hard to even choose. One that immediately comes to mind, though, just as we are talking here, especially about Sign. So in Sign, you... like one of the core mechanics is improvised sign that you come up with on the spot and that you share amongst the other players that are there. One of the things you do is you give yourself a name in sign as the first acts of the game. But in one particular version of the game that I ran, the children, you end up playing as these children who are part of this story, during their like recess classroom time decided that they were going to pretend to be cats. And so they gave themselves all nicknames as well. And the way that they would show the nicknames is by adding on like almost this whisker-like motion onto their name. All of this happening completely silently, right? With no prior discussion and just emergent. And so everyone would have their real name and then their cat name, which I thought was adorable and amazing.
So, and your games are based around language, and one thing we've talked about before on our podcast and just in some of our articles is the idea of language dependency. And I know your game is, you know, I don't know, do you think your game allows for people from different language backgrounds to play together? And like, are you seeing anything in our industry that is helping to break down language barriers and things like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for dialect is a game that you can play in any language, but you really need to have that mutual understanding among players because you're modifying a dialect based off of the language that you all share. And so we're going through the process of translating that now, but it's been played in many languages around the world. But again, it still requires that mutual understanding. What's really cool and what I think is an opportunity for the whole industry at large is to facilitate, like you say, these experiences for people that don't actually speak the same language at all. And games are an amazing way of doing that because they give you rules of engagement. Like this is how we should interact. And you may be able to localize parts of it while still having meaningful and interesting interactions with people that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. And Sign actually is one of those games that can and has been used that way, which is pretty cool. And part of the reason for that is that Sign is entirely silent and you're building up effectively, like, again, this proto-sign language that's defined on the spot by the players, facilitated by cards. So rules are doled out by individual cards that have particular instructions on them at different points in the game. So you can have people who have completely different language backgrounds. This has been played in in refugee camps, but as well as also we've heard from universities that are using it as part of their onboarding program for new students who are, you know, foreign students and trying to make friends, but also like don't have like great footing in the language. But what you can do is read the cards and actually translate the cards in different languages. So people are getting the rules and instructions in whatever way is most native for them. But again, all interaction by design is done where people are effectively building up this language from scratch. And given that that is the case, like you can actually have a whole meaningful game from people who couldn't otherwise speak in a conversation because they don't speak the same language. But now they have their proto sign language.
That's awesome. And I think, and I love the creativity of, but yeah, how do we let this, you know, people play together? Oh, let's just eliminate the language part. Like, you know, talking is dumb. Let's get rid of that. So no, I really think I'm really tempted to go out and just try it right now. So kind of, you know, in wrapping up, what are some things you guys have planned for the future over at Thorny Games, and things we can all be looking forward to?
Like we mentioned earlier, we're working on a third release this year called Xenolanguage. Xenolanguage is going to be a tabletop role-playing game that is inspired by a short story by Ted Chiang called Story of Your Life that was later made into a movie that was inspired by that story called Arrival. The premise is that it's 5 minutes in the future and we've just made first contact. The players are scientists that are tasked with deciphering this new alien language. Mm-hmm. And as they begin to gain fluency in this alien language, they start seeing the world differently. That is personally for me like a story that is deeply meaningful. I think there's a lot that we can explore around getting exposure to concepts and words that are different than what we natively have as part of our tool set, and how that can help you name things that are true about the world that may have always been true, but that now having the word is helping you say and see. So I'm really excited about that. And as a part of it, we're building up like a lot of attention around what will be, I think, this cool object that will sit in the middle of play. It will be the main kind of surface of play for people. And we really want to make the object itself be immersive so that you kind of feel like these scientists that are around this platform that is the way that you're talking to aliens.
That's awesome. So if I'm Amy Adams, do I get an automatic bonus as I'm playing the game?
Well, a lot of our games don't have, you know, lots of stats around them. But if we decided to mod it in that way, you totally should.
Yeah, I call Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, one of those two. I'm going to be them. Awesome. Well, I mean, this is all, like I said, it's stuff that is different. And if, you know, I think if gamers are kind of looking for a change of pace and a change of how they've been playing games, Thorny Games is definitely something that people should check out. ThornyGames.com. I personally purchased a game while you and I were talking earlier and getting ready. So you guys, I'll be able to give you more information on Dialect soon enough, but you guys should totally check out Thorny Games. And is there anywhere else on the internet we can find out more about you?
ThornyGames.com is great. I am also on Twitter as at Chicala Shaw. So ChicalaShaw.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope we can continue to keep up with you guys and the awesome things you're doing in the industry.
Awesome. Thank you.
And we are back. Rick, thanks for handling that interview with Catherine. That's awesome.
Yes, indeed.
So, Rick, we are coming up on our 3-year anniversary as a website. One Board Family has been around. We started in 2016, and in June, we're celebrating 3 years. So I thought it would be interesting to look back at our first 4 reviews that we ever put together. So I pulled 2 of mine and I pulled 2 of yours, and we'll share what you know, I'll share when we post it. And then let's share like what our thoughts are 3 years later. So one of my first reviews on the site is Sushi Go Party. I reviewed that on June 22nd, 2016. And we had actually just gotten that. I think I got it for Father's Day. It was Father's Day weekend. And we were at Moxie Games, our local game shop. And I grabbed the copy of it because it just hit store shelves. Didn't even know about it. And I was like, we need this. We love Sushi Go. Sushi Go Party sounds amazing. And it is still a game that comes out regularly. Sushi Go Party has become a family favorite because I think it supports so many players, and I think that's a big reason why it keeps coming to the table. It supports up to 8 players, but also the flexibility of it, changing up the different menus and things like that, makes it completely replayable, which I love. And so Sushi Go Party is still a favorite of ours.
So did you buy yourself a Father's Day present is the moral of that story?
No, Aaron was like, it's Father's Day weekend. Why don't we get, do you want this? I was like, yeah, okay. I want that. So, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were like, this is me. I have been a good father, and this is my reward to myself.
I get this.
Forget a coffee mug. I'm getting a board game. No, I do. I think, you know, we talked about it last week, and when we talked about Sushi Roll. Again, continues to be a solid game for you to have in your library. You know, inexpensive and has a lot of variety. So yeah, Sushi Go Party, a solid way for us to start off, you know, with some reviews, man. Awesome. Well, so Ryan, you know, you guys started One Board Family, and because I'm a hanger on, I wanted to join in and be helpful, and so I wanted to do my first review over a game that I didn't think a lot of people would have heard of, and it was Walk on Fire. Have you ever gotten to play Walk on Fire, Ryan?
I haven't, but that is a Green Couch game, and love Green Couch games. That was one that you've told me about, and you've actually busted out a couple times with students and family and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the thing that I liked about it, Walk on Fire was my first Kickstarter back. So, you know, back when I was just a young little gamer, not knowing a whole lot, and it was something where, a mechanic in which game components were being used in a way that I hadn't seen before. And that's basically a game where you take ingredients cards, you put them all in a pile, and you use a big spatula, to flip cards. So it's a spatula card to flip other cards, and cards that land face up, you take two of them, put them into your collection, and it kind of has a Sushi Go scoring mechanism where you get points based on how many you've collected, and sometimes it's compared to other players. Sometimes you have to have like only two, and if you have three, you lose points, kind of thing. Since, you know, reviewing that game, I actually have sold my copy of Walk on Fire. And I think part of that was I found that the scoring mechanics were not great. And really, it kind of loses some of its, you know, that unique mechanic starts to lose some punch after you've played it a couple of times. And so there were just better options that I could go to.
Yeah.
If you find it for a cheap price, it's not a horrible game to pick up. But it's not as strong of a start, I would say, as Sushi Go Party was.
So my next game, one of my earliest games that I reviewed on the site, was Harbor from TMG Games. Harbor is essentially this I feel like it's an economics game. You're working with this basically these stocks of fish. What is it? Fish, meat, wood, and stone. And so these different items are going different directions on the stock market that's in the middle of the table, and you are trying to sell your goods to purchase new buildings for your harbor. And so you're trying to become the harbor master, the best harbor master around, by collecting these buildings. I think the game,
as we always did when we were young children,
young harbor masters. I think you're trying to collect a total of 5. Everybody starts with 1 harbor building, their base building, and then you're trying to collect 4 more to get a total of 5. The first one to hit five ends the game. The game is very good. It's a small game that takes up a decent sized footprint. We've brought Harbor with us to eat at a pizza restaurant before. We've taken it on vacation. We've played it at a coffee shop. We've played it around the house. I think that we played a lot of it, and it's not that it wore out its welcome. I think that other than it being a small portable game, if we're just playing around the house, there are other economic games that I would play over it. Mm-hmm. Now, the twist is that we recently got the expansion for Harbor, the very first expansion for Harbor from TMG Games. So we're going to be doing a review for that over the summer. And so I'm really excited about seeing if that rejuvenates my love for this game, because I still really enjoy it. I just don't know that it is my first choice when I talk about those mechanics.
Right. Well, and it's, I mean, the artwork is really cool.
Yes.
It's a funny, you know, artwork, I would say. There's some humor involved in the game. I think it is weird in that it's a very small box, but it takes up a lot of space.
Really does.
They've done some really cool stuff with components, like the way that market values are determined is interesting. The way that you keep track of how much you have of each thing, instead of having a tiny little piece to represent how many fish you've got, you just slide a little fish marker along a track. It makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah.
And it works really well. I like Harbor. I haven't played it as much as you, and so maybe it didn't wear, I don't think it's worn out its welcome. I do think it has, that small box is a good thing and a bad thing, because I think sometimes you can forget about it because it doesn't catch your eye as quickly on the shelf. Yeah. But it's really fun, and one that is still readily available and people can get their hands
on. Yeah, Harbor is definitely, I would say that, you know, Harbor went from a love it, take it with us everywhere, to a we take it with us when we think about it, because we still enjoy it. So, I still think it holds a lot of value 3 years later.
Totally. Well, my, you know, second one that I reviewed is Lost Cities, which is a card game from Reiner. Can we call him that now that he's been on our podcast?
Yes.
Can we just call him by a first name?
Oh, yeah.
That's how it works. Lost Cities is a very basic two-player game in which you've got a set of cards, and there's five different colors, and the cards number 1 to 10, and then there are three extra cards which are used as multipliers. So your job is on your turn to either place a card on your side, and you're trying to go in ascending order, or you discard a card. And so you're trying to get as many points as possible. Points come from the cards that you lay out, but you subtract 20 from every track before you start adding up your points. And so what that means is you can't just start laying cards down on your side, because if you don't reach that 20, you're going to lose points. And so it becomes a really good hand management game, because you can't play everything, but so you like hold on to cards so that you can play them later, but you also can't discard things that you know your opponent is going to want, because then they're going to be able to get points and things like that. So you really, for a very simple game, it takes a lot of hand management, a lot of good stuff. It's a really good game, and my wife and I still play it. Probably in our top three two-player games that we own, even still. The game right now, as I'm looking on Amazon, costs about $17. I would say wait till it's on sale. It's a really good game, and if you've got money laying around, go for it. But to me, because it's just a deck of like 60 cards and a simple board, it's hard for me to recommend at that price, because it seems too simple. But it is a really good game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm kind of torn there.
But think about the amount of hours. I think the amount of hours you guys have spent playing that game as a value proposition, like
you
definitely got $17 worth of it.
I would say so.
There are games that I've played four times that I've spent $20 on. I'm like, that's okay. Yeah. So. Yeah. Very cool. Well, that's a look back at some of our very first reviews from One Board Family. And we've got one more episode in this season of the podcast. So what that means for anybody who is a new listener to the show, we take a break after 15 episodes of the show. It gives us a chance to refuel, and it gives us a chance to kind of think about how we can format the show better for you all, the listener. We will continue to do Will It Game. So as long as you're subscribed to our RSS feed, or whatever podcast service or iTunes, whatever you're subscribing through, stay subscribed because you're going to continue to get new episodes of Will It Game. While we're on break, we're actually going to do some special editions of the podcast where we talk about some of the conventions that we go to over the next couple of weeks. We're going to be doing some convention hopping during the summer, and so you'll hear some different voices, including some guests on the show and some interviews that we're really looking forward to. So, with saying all that, you can find us at oneboardfamily.com on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and all of those services. You can find us at One Board Family. And that's about it. Subscribe. Let us know how we're doing on the show. And tell a friend about it. That helps us tremendously.
And hey, rate the podcast too. That's really helpful.
It really is. So those little things, telling a friend or sharing it and rating the podcast does a lot for us. The podcast has grown significantly this season. And so we're really excited about the growth and all the new listeners. We appreciate you guys lending us your ears for 30 minutes a week or whatever. So until next time, we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.